Hi everyone and welcome to There's a Workshop for That. I'm Nati Ravez, your host and the founder of La Workshoppers. If you are as passionate as I am in the power of facilitation, you are in the right place. On this podcast, experts in the field join me to share their experiences, insights, and practical tips. So whether you're a seasoned facilitator or simply curious about how well-designed and facilitated workshops can transform teams and organizations, this podcast is for you. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episode. And if you like what you hear, please give it a 5-star on your podcast app. So now, sit back, relax, and let's dive into today's topic and meet our guest. Let's go! Hi, everybody, and welcome to this new episode of There's a Workshop for That. We will start in a few minutes with our guest of the day. But before we start, I have another guest in the house. I welcome Deborah Rimoso, which is the beautiful mind behind the State of Facilitation report edited by Session Lab. And I invited her because the survey which will lead to this report is starting right now for the two next months. And she wants to talk about what are the great reasons for you out there as facilitators to fill out this survey. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Nati. Thank you for the invitation and for the introduction. And thank you to everybody who is listening to your podcast. So do you want me to go straight into this?
Yes, please.
Okay. So in case somebody doesn't know, I'll just remind the audience that the State of Facilitation Project is a yearly report that comes out at the beginning of the year, full of data and insights and comments and information on the state of the most beautiful profession in the world, which I share and I love. And we compile that report with information that people from all around the world generously share with us through the State of Facilitation Survey. So that's why I am here to invite everybody to go to sessionlab.com/state of facilitation. And I'm sure Nathie will share links and fill out the survey. And I have promised Nathie to give you a few good reasons to do that. So why should you dedicate 10, 15 minutes of your time to filling out what is objectively a rather long survey? I've thought of 4 reasons. And then if you know others, now you can add them. So I'm going to go from most selfish to most generous. Most selfish, we have lists in there of top facilitation communities, top facilitation books, top facilitation podcasts. Go in to vote your favorites up. That way you will see Nathie's podcasts go up and to be in the very top of facilitators' favorite podcasts from around the world. So that is a very good reason to do it if you are a member of a community, if you love a particular resource. You can always add new resources under other. And that's a rather selfish, but very good reason to fill it out. Another good reason to fill it out is I take part in writing the questions and I'm a facilitator. So I try to make it so that it's also an opportunity to reflect on your past year in facilitation. What were your challenges? What did you learn? This kind of very self-reflective questions that facilitators like and workshoppers like. So it's an opportunity to stop, make yourself a cup of tea, and reflect on your year. Third is that you learn by filling out this survey. This I didn't know. This came to me through feedback that people left, that because it's full of these lists of favorite tools, for example, lists of favorite tools for reporting, uses of AI, it's inspiring for people to read and go like, oh, that's something I hadn't thought of doing or something I hadn't thought of using. So you learn by filling it out. And then the most generous reason, which I like to think is probably the best reason, is because the more people fill out the survey, the more representative data we have. So the more the report is going to reflect the diversity and the richness and the different ideas of the facilitation community across the world. Those are my reasons, Nathie. What do you think?
I think these are very valuable reasons. I can tell that from the first time I filled out this survey, I learned so much. I learned so much about books I never heard about before, or methods. And And I think this is the most valuable thing, to learn something. And of course, this community is such a kind community and we learn from each other. I never saw a community like this, where people rely on each other and share and care. And this is the best way to give a bit of your experience for this great report that will come out in
early 2025, as soon as we can get it together. So at some point in January 2025, the report will come out. It is important to remember that the report is always free for everybody to read. You can read it online. You can download it as a PDF. It is not behind firewalls or things like that. So that's important. Another thing I thought worth mentioning in this podcast, since you have, I'm sure, French-speaking people, is you can fill out the survey in different languages. It is an automated translation. It makes a few funny mistakes, but it works well enough. And we are very happy if in any case, even if you are reading it in English, you put your answers in other languages. We are now so fortunate in the world that we have all these automated translation tools that might not be perfect, but they allow us to understand the meaning if people want to fill it out in français, for example.
Oh, very good. This is new, I think. Last year it was in Spanish, English. Yes.
Last year, we did in Spanish and English with the help of fantastic volunteers from IAF. And this was, it was a better done translation because it was humans doing it, but it is a lot of work to do a translation. So this year we are testing to see if our automated friends or AI overlords can help us out to understand one another across the globe a bit better, even though, I mean, I am sure it makes some funny mistakes. But it's good enough. It's good enough.
Yeah, I'm sure it's good enough. So to all the listeners, take 15 minutes of your time. The survey is open until the end of October. You will find a link in the show notes of the podcast. You can also go, of course, to the website of Session Lab. You will find the link there also. And Deborah, I know you know him, so I would let you introduce my next guest of the day.
Yeah, so every year we have some contributors who write their insights in the report. And since for the second year in a row, there is a special section dedicated to AI and how people are using AI in facilitation, we could not but invite to the report, and you cannot but invite on your podcast, whatever he talks about. It's always fascinating. Everybody's favorite facilitation AI expert, Alex Eisenstetter.
Exact. Thank you. And see you soon, Deborah. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Nathy. Bye.
Hello, everyone. I'm very happy to welcome French facilitator with extensive experience, a specialist in AI, and also an expert in facilitating large groups, workshops. What will be our topic of the day? He is the creator of Storms, a digital board designed for brainstorming, retrospectives, and decision-making, and one of the tools he is using in his workshop. We will talk about that. And he leads his community called AI Tinkerer. There are more than enough reasons to have him with us today. And one more is that we know each other and I consider him as a friend. We had several lunch in Paris on a small terrace. Welcome to my friend, Alex Eisenstetter.
Hello, Nati. Thank you for that great introduction. And you know, you're more than welcome. Let's do another lunch in Paris whenever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll
nice.
Do that for sure.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I just come back from a few days of vacation, so I'm totally disconnected from the world of facilitation. And thanks to you, I'm diving in again. I'm really happy to talk about that, especially that, if I understand well, we're going to talk about something that I really like, which is facilitating large groups.
Yeah, exactly. But before we dive in this topic of the day, I would love to hear a little bit of your background. I know you have a big, big experience, but I would like to know...
Yeah, so let's take a couple of hours for that.
Yeah, so I would like to know where you're coming from at the beginning and how you tap into facilitation.
So there's a fun story about that, is that my first job out of my engineering school was at 3M, you know, the American company, the one that created the post-it notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the first training that I did when I arrived at that company was creative problem solving, which includes how to brainstorm, how to diverge and converge. And that was my first training. And of course, we were using post-it notes because that was one of the company's product. So as an engineer, I was facilitating all the time on the shop floor, on the manufacturing lines with the technicians and the operators. And each time we were having the problem, the culture in this company was to take a board, take some post-it notes and brainstorm some solutions. So already in my first job, I was facilitating workshops, except that I didn't know the term at that time. You know, I didn't know that I was doing a facilitation. And I'm sure that it is the case of a huge majority of your audience, by the way. I've heard that story so many times.
Yeah.
So I started like that as an engineer on the shop floor. And one of the things is I started to do some complex projects. And some of my projects had international teams. And I immediately ran into some problems because I wanted to do the same kind of brainstorming that I was doing with the operators and the technicians, except that, well, some of the guys in my team were in Germany, other people were in the US, and we were communicating on the phone. There was no video conference at that time, old times. So it was impossible to conduct brainstorming with these remote teams. And I had this seed of frustration in my mind. And fast forward, a few years later, I decided to leave the company. And I went to work into a web techno company. And one of the technologies that we developed at that time was a real-time technology, because at that time, the web was not real-time. You had to click on a button to refresh the page. So we were working on that technology. And we were thinking, what kind of thing can we do with this tech? We had the tech, but not the use case. Typical engineer stuff. Anyway, so I was at a conference, and on this, you know, at the conference, usually you have some libraries, they are selling books. And I was looking at all these books, and I was thinking, what can I buy so that I have something to read on the travel back to France? Trip back to France, and I saw something that is called game storming. I think it was in 2010 or 11, so that was the first edition. And I took the book. It was serendipity. I mean, it was totally random because I liked the cover, and I saw everything about. I started reading the first chapter about brainstorming, and by reading that book, it reminded me of all that time as an engineer doing these brainstormings. And it also reminded me that I had this seed of frustration of not being able to do it remotely. And it also reminded me that I was working on a real-time technology and that I was looking for a use case. And all this thinking connected together, and it gave me the idea to develop a real-time brainstorming application for remote teams. And remember, we were in 2010 or 11 at that time, so that was not something common.
No.
So that was the idea of what is now Storms, which is my company and an application that I've been developing for 12 years now. So at the beginning, it was the idea of making it possible to do some sophisticated brainstorming with some remote teams, some people that were in different locations. So that's the beginning of my story. Would you like to know more about how I went from that to being a pro facilitator?
Yes, please.
Yes, you would like? Are you sure?
Yes.
You have another couple of hours? Yeah, okay.
No.
So I founded my company on the prospect of building a remote brainstorming tool at that time. So when I started to go and see some people and tell them, and see some facilitators and tell them, hey, I've got this great concept of a tool to do some remote brainstorming. That was January 2012. Everybody, all the facilitators were looking at me and say, come on, no, you cannot do any remote brainstorming. That's not facilitation. Facilitation has to be in the same room. This is, I felt like I was going an to alien. Be excommunicated. a real facilitator do not do any remote workshops. At that time, that was a big no. Mm-hmm. So I had to pivot. And few weeks later, after starting the company, I met with the HR director of a big transportation company in France. And she was telling me the same thing. Well, no, I'm not interested into remote facilitation, but in a couple of weeks, I have a big event with 120 HR managers from my organization. And I think that we want to brainstorm how we can open the company to younger talents. Mm-hmm. Okay, typical challenge for big old companies.
Yeah.
And she told me, maybe you can do that with your tool. And so I had this tool that was made for a small team of remote people to do brainstorming. And she was asking me for a use case for a large group of people in person. And of course, I said, yes. I was not sure it was possible technically because we didn't even think about that use case. So I went back to my co-founder and I told him, you're going to hate me, but we need to be able to do a brainstorming with 100 person in person in, 4 weeks or something like that. And I was lucky because my co-founder was a great guy and he told me, yes, of course, we're going to do that. And we developed the tool and we did some crazy stuff to make it possible in so little time. And it was a big success. So this is how I found that if you combine facilitation with the right technology and the right amount of technology, you can do some stuff that would be very difficult without the technology. And the only problem is that you can sell a tool for small remote brainstorming. People can use it on their own. But imagine I just sell the tool to this HR manager. That wouldn't be possible. You have to sell the service with that.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
With this pivot, I had not only to change the tool to adapt to this use case, but I also had to develop the facilitation agency to sell the service around the product. And this is how. I think that was something like April 2012, 4 months after launching the company. I pivoted, I created the facilitation agency. And this is how I've been facilitating more than 500 large group workshops. We've been facilitating workshops with hundreds of people, thousands of people inside the same room, and using that technology to make it easier possible, to enable it, et cetera, et cetera.
One question. When you say you have facilitated so much big workshops, who are the people in the room? Because is that corporates are really big groups of companies or
yeah.
Who?
It's a very specific job. It's very different from SFI that I facilitate because what I really do is that I leverage the collective intelligence of the people that are inside the room. But the job is quite different from a facilitator of a small group. And the typical use case is that you have a division or a department or an organization that gather all their managers or employees inside the same room. And maybe they're going to have some presentations. And normally these internal events are very top down. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the years, they were becoming more interactive. So interactive is bottom up. It's you make a survey, you make a quiz. And my expertise is to add the third type of interaction, which is the collaborative interactions, which is to transform these events into collaborative events, into events where these 100 or 300 persons are able to work together on some very important challenges for their company. So The challenges can be very different. I'm not specialized into a specific type of challenge. It can be an HR challenge. It can be a marketing challenge, a selling challenge, whatever it is. But if the solution can be found by the people that are in the room, and if we can leverage collective intelligence, I have the know-how, the tools, and the expertise to make it possible.
And, okay, so, I mean, I know a lot of followers who are workshop facilitators, normally in organizations having a group from 5 to maybe 25, 30 people. What are the skills needed as a person to become a large group facilitator?
So as I said, it's I think so. First of all, you have different kind of large group workshops. The one that I do are in a context of big seminars, big conferences, big events, and often you don't have. So you're not the only one to, it's during 1 or 2 days and maybe you have 3 hours or an afternoon. If you're lucky, you have one afternoon and one morning. And this context, it's a mix of being a facilitator, being a workshop designer, being an animator, being a master of ceremony. You also have to do a little bit of, I know that some facilitators are going to say, we are not doing any show, but. Yeah, when you have to do both the content and the form, both are important in this kind of events because this is what the customer wants. So even if the content, we know the content is more important, you also have to give the form. So I think you have to develop, because I hadn't these skills at the beginning. You have to develop these specific skills of being on a stage and being able to attract the attention of 100 or 200 people at the same time. You have to develop some specific design skills because I work on the same kind of challenges that I can do with 20 people, but I do them with 200 people. You don't design it the same way. So I created my own designed frameworks and techniques that I use over the years. So it's basically like a facilitator, but in this very specific context, you have to do it a little bit differently.
And I guess, so you told me that you are doing this during conferences, maybe with big, big companies, maybe who have thousands of employees.
So most of my clients are big corporations because these are the ones to do all these internal events, but it could also be startups, but usually startups that raised funds because you need to have some quite a good amount of money to be able to organize these events. The budget of these events, not the budget for me, but the budget for these events are multiple hundreds of Ks. I remember one fun story. I remember that I was doing a workshop. It was one of the biggest that I did. It was 1,200 persons inside the same room. And we had to work on the company strategy. And I remember that I sold the workshop for something like 30K euros. So it was a 3 hours workshop. But I remember that the lighting system cost the company 70K. So I was only half the price of the lighting budget.
Yes, and I guess I can imagine that there is a lot of setting to be prepared before, because if you are one person on a stage, and you are creating groups to be able to make this unlocking of the collective intelligence.
There are a huge amount of prep work, especially at the beginning. But now everything is very productive because I've made it so many times, and you have some patterns that you reuse a lot. But anyway, you have the design, and to be able to design, it's like every other workshop, you have to gather all the context, constraints, objectives, etc., and then build the right design. adapted to the size of the events, the number of hours that you have, and the type of venue, which is very important. I try to have rooms where I can have circles of discussions. So mm-hmm. I have everybody in front of me. I don't do breakouts if I can, because I hate breakouts. It's much more dynamic to have everybody in the same room with me, and I can facilitate all of them just me being on stage. But sometimes I have breakouts. Sometimes I have auditorium, which is a nightmare for collective intelligence, but still,
yeah,
you can do some stuff. And if you have the right technology, you can do some impressive stuff. So you have to prepare all of that. You have to make sure you have to coordinate with the event agency. So that's a stakeholder that you don't have in the smaller workshops.
Yeah.
And in my job, I work a lot with the event agencies, and I have some event agencies that I really like to work with because they understand collective intelligence. But I've also seen some event agencies that don't understand anything about collective intelligence and just think that it's yet another type of interactive sequence. So you really have to explain this kind of stuff. So you have to make sure they understand how to set up the room. That's a lot of project management, much more a higher level than what you need to do when you have 30 people in the room, for sure.
Yeah.
So you have prep, project management, coordination,
and logistics,
all of that goes in the same bucket for me. And this is the boring stuff, but if you don't do it well, you're going to have huge failure. Everything can go south if you don't do that the right way. And then you have the nice job, which is the design. The design is the part that I really like in the prep work, because you can be creative, you can invent some new stuff. You have the constraints are important and make you more creative. Let's say, for example, that you have only 3 rooms, how I can deal with that. So all that gives you some more creativity. I like to mix high-tech and low-tech. So even with 300 persons, I can have card decks on the table. So this is what I really like. But if you only focus on that, and if you don't think that logistic is as important as that, well, you're going to run into huge issues at the end of the workshop, and you're going to lose your client. And then you have facilitation. Facilitation is a totally different skill set. I'm doing all of them. I suppose you can have a team where someone designs and someone else facilitates, but I've never seen that work very well. So facilitating when you have 300 person in front of you, imagine you have everybody in the same room, circles of discussions. Just one example. I instantly see if someone is experienced or not by their capacity to ask for silence.
Yeah.
So that makes all the difference. And then how people are going to really listen to your instructions and all of that. It's just an example of how facilitating with hundreds of people is a little bit different than facilitating with 20 people. At, I must say, and it's not that it is, facilitating smaller group is not easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some things are easier when you have a large group. So that might be a little bit counterintuitive, but let me give you an example. When you facilitate a group of 10 person, if one of them is a pain in the, it's 10% of your group. So it's going to be a real issue and you will have to deal with that person. In a group of 300, well, if one or two or three of them are a pain in the, well, it's less of a problem because they don't have an impact on all the room.
Yeah.
So you don't have to put the same importance into putting them back into the dynamic. So this is one example of something that is easier in a large group than in a small group.
And how can you make sure that you engage all the 300 people?
That's a vast question, Nati.
Because I've been facilitating groups of 70 people. I think it was the largest group that I had. And I had them on different table, and I had co-facilitators who were walking around the tables when we were giving activities to do.
Yeah.
So it was our way to make sure that everyone is engaged, to ask questions if they need more support or help, or if they have questions. When I imagine you on a stage with 300 people, this question, how do you do to make sure everyone is engaged?
Most of the time I do them alone, up to 300. But that's absolutely not what I advise people. My advice has always been two facilitators up to 100, and then one more facilitator for every additional 100 participants.
Okay.
So that's 70, I would be two, 150, I would be three, 250, I would be four. So first of all, I really changed the way I design my workshops now. Before, I was really babysitting the participants. I was making very precise instructions, lots of steps, very formalized and very processed. Now I do workshops that are much more open, and I trust the participants to do their job the right way. And most of the time they are experienced managers. They should be able to know how to work. And if they don't know or don't want to work, that's their problem, not mine. I really don't try to engage 100% of the participants. I don't care about that. It's not my job. If someone don't want to work on the strategy of their department, that's not my problem and not my job to put them back on. And this event, this workshop is not a tool to engage them into working in the company. There is a deeper problem if some people don't want to work on that. So my job is to make sure that the big majority of people, 90% of them, are engaged, and to give them the tool. And then I trust them to do their tool the right way. And then as I make them work in small circles of discussions, I try to make the circle small, less than seven people, because with more than seven people, you're going to get some issues with introverts not talking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I use a lot is the group of three people, one, two, three. This way, I'm sure that everybody who wants to participate will have a voice in the system.
Yeah.
So I use the group of three a lot. And then two group of threes who share together, it's my circle of discussion. So I use a system that I called 1-3-6-0, which is very similar to the one from...
Liberating structure.
Exactly that, but I discovered that, I think we did that at the same time because it was 2012, 2013. So I was not aware of their, they do 1-2-4, I think, something like that.
One,
two, four, old. So I do exactly the same, but I mean, it's not rocket science. This is why we have invented the same system. What's funny is that we have invented the same name. So the 1-3-6-0 I prefer much more than the 1-2-4, by the way, because I really like a dynamic of the group of three. Since 2013, I think, or 12, I've designed all my system on the group of three, because three is a group, two is not a group, and three is an odd number of people, so you can have debate and discussions and decisions and stuff like that. So I really like the group of three. Did I say that I really like the group of three?
Yeah, you said that you really like the group of three. So, but I know that you have actually this great tool, Storms, that enables you also to engage everyone. I mean, I've been using it myself. And I was also in a workshop where Storms, the tool, was used. And I was a participant.
Mm-hmm.
So I did both. And it was my workshop was with 15 people. So it was not for a big group. But Storms is really a magical platform where people can interact with their mobile phone directly. And then you see directly on the screen words appearing. You see the questions appearing. You can use the AI function to help the brainstorming of the participants at the beginning, for example?
Everything works together. I mean, it's great you mentioned Storms now, because Storms and the group of three really works together. So Storms is the tool I invented. I told you the story at the beginning, that at the beginning it was created for remote workshops and still is great, because I was doing a remote workshop at some point, not a lot, but even in 2013, 14, 15, we were doing a little bit of remote workshops. But most of the time, I was using it for in-person workshops. Because, so I told you, the way I designed my workshops is that if you have 100 person in the room and you want them to participate, you have to create this small circle of discussions and you have to create this debate structure that are the group of three. But then you have an issue. How do you make cross-pollination between two circles of discussion that are on one side, on both sides of the room, of the venue? Okay? If you don't use technology, you're going to have some big wall with post-it notes and have people take a mic and present something. But the Storms technology is a much better replacement to that, because imagine we are, Nati and me, we are working together on a new idea. Mm-hmm. We discuss. Only one of us has a phone, because we don't want to have everybody have a nose on their phone. So only one people in our circle of discussion has a phone, and create a virtual card in Storms. And instantly, this card might be visible to all the other circles of discussion in the room. And they can see it. So it creates the cross-pollination process. They can comment it, so it gives us feedback on what they like about our ideas so that we can improve it based on their feedback. They can vote, prioritize. So really, we have all the features to organize what we do, from harvesting all these ideas that are created by the different circles and trinomes. And the tool is flexible enough that you can really adapt to any kind of process and design. But really, the basic idea is that we want everybody to participate, so we create group of threes and circle of discussions. But we want all the ideas from all the groups to be visible at any time to all the other groups, if we want. And we use the technology and Storms for that. Now, there is a fun story of why Storms is working so great. Mm-hmm. Because we are a very small company, very little number of developers, but very good developers, by the way. But it's a tool we've been developing for 12 years, and we have developed the tool first for ourselves. So I've been using the tool myself for in-person workshops for more than a decade, meaning that I was in the room when the participants were using the tool on their mobile phone or iPad at that time. And I was seeing their faces, meaning that when they were frustrated by a feature, I was seeing it instantly and I was feeling all the rage. So I can tell you that the next day I was coming back to the design team and developer teams and tell them, we need to change that feature, it doesn't work. So I had instant feedback myself. It's something that the other software developers do not have.
Yeah.
They don't Absolutely. See. And all of the others who are doing tools for remote workshop, they don't see how the participants struggle with their tool. I was seeing that myself. Day, workshop after workshop, month after month, year after year, we were gathering all this input and insight from our participants. And this is why now, the reason why, without any marketing budget, so many people are still using Storms today is because it's super easy for first-time participants. You don't have to train them. You don't have 15 minutes of warm-up activity to use the tool. You just ask them to log in, to input a pseudonym, and they are in and they can start with the first activity. So even if you need only the tool for 15 minutes in a whole day, you can use it.
Crazy. I use it and it's really great. I had nothing to explain as I facilitated that workshop. Thank you so much. So I have only one question.
What is your question?
If someone, I don't know if I am allowed to, I will not reveal anything, but if someone would like to become a large group facilitator, what kind of resource can he or she have to get all the things she or he need to do that?
So right now, the one thing that they can do is, for example, is subscribe to my newsletter because I give some tips, insights, and stuff like that, and follow me on LinkedIn because I often give some tips and tricks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm working right now with someone. She's called Natty. Do you know her?
So, we are building
a very specific program where we're going to share
how to do that.
How to do that. And one of the things that we didn't speak and we're going to keep it a secret until now is that there is a very specific business model that I created to be able to sell these workshops without having to do too much selling. And I think that's as important as the design and facilitation part. So I guess the answer to your question, Natty, is, well, follow us.
Absolutely. There is something we are working on, and this might come in beginning of next year. But stay tuned. Who knows? Maybe we will tease this before. But for anyone who is really interested in facilitating these kind of workshops, and I'm aware that this is not for everyone, but this is things that I love. For example, we are working together and I'm very happy to collaborate on it with you,
I think,
Alex.
One of the key ideas of that is also, because sometimes you have to speak about money, it's much easier to sell a large group workshop a big amount of money than to sell a small group workshop. Even if you had a lot of value in a small group workshop, it's going to be more difficult to convince your client to put a big budget on it if you have 7 people in the room. Whereas if you have 300 persons in the room, you
can absolutely
go higher. So that might be, I don't know if a good motivation. We all have to leave, which means that you can leave with less than one workshop per month with that kind of workshop.
You have maybe to manage more things. But at the end, you do this one time a month and you have your month's salary, a good salary. So
yeah,
stay tuned. Thank you, Alex, very much that you were here finally.
Thank you for the invitation, and I'm waiting for our next lunch.
Yeah, we are very soon. Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't hesitate to contact our guest. You'll find all the information in the show notes. And hey, if you like the content of There's a Workshop for That, please give it a 5 stars on your podcast app. And you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, La Workshoppers. Also, I'd love to read your comments, suggestions of guests, or any question you have. For this, use the form called Hey Natty in the show notes. And until our next episode, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir.